This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not contain or replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James. And for this bonus edition, we're talking about cult status. And I'm joined by Tim Duggan, the co-founder of Junkie Media. A lot of us have heard of Junkie, the publication, the online website. Welcome, Tim. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Glenn. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's been fun. Now, you've just launched a book. It's launched today as, coincidentally, when we're releasing this podcast.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, I'm very excited. This is the book here in my hands. It is the first book that I've written. It's called Cult Status.
Great.
How to Build a Business People Adore. And the whole point of this book is that there's this whole new generation of entrepreneurs coming through, most of them being millennials and Gen Z, and they're building these new types of businesses. And most of these businesses are very different from businesses that their parents and grandparents had. Most of them have really strong communities at the core of them. So I started noticing this in my business and personal life and just over the past couple of years, and realized that not much had been written about this new generation.
Yeah.
So I wrote a book.
You did.
Yeah.
Now, before we uncover the conversation, and this could go anywhere because it's our bonus episodes are, they're not really the same structure as our Tuesday shows, so we've got a little bit more latitude. So if you are a business owner, absolutely, you're going to get a lot out of this. I know I have in the parts that I've read of the book. If you're an aspiring business owner, and a lot of you who are listening have said that you're keen to start a business one day. So this is going to give you the foundations you need. So if you've got a business, you might have to change a few things. If you're going to start a business, you can look at the foundations. But if you're like, well, I work for a non-for-profit or I work for a corp, I love what I do, I don't care about starting my own business, I want you to have a listen to this interview and just reflect on your workplace. And then maybe at team meetings, can you start to influence your world? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a really fair statement. So I wrote it for just to get people a bit inspired at the moment. Number one, the world outside this studio is a bit crazy right now. And I'm a business optimist and believe that there's all these amazing tools that business can use. And most people, a lot of people kind of think about one day I'd like to do this, one day I'd like to start a business. But some people also just really enjoy working, really enjoy working for someone, the security that comes with that. And I wrote the book so that even if you do have a job and you maybe don't think you want to start your own business, there's still something in here because you might be able to find something in there that you can go and talk to your boss about or a way that you can change your workplace.
Yeah. So I basically think, well, categorically, the book has seven steps to creating a business with cult status. So think of your favorite cult. Do you have a favorite cult?
I don't have a favorite cult. Good. I've tried to separate a bit the negative parts of a cult with the good parts of having a business with cult status.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my quick definition of a business with cult status is one that has a really strong community at the core of it.
Yeah.
And when you've got a strong community, I look at the M3 community and what you've built, that's a business that has cult status because you've got this community there who then start doing some of the heavy lifting and they start promoting it to their friends and they talk about
it. Well, the weird thing is there's so many people in the community that are more qualified than me. So I'm just like, hey, I'm just trying to lead this bad boy. Like so many times it's like people have written into me and said, hey, Glenn, what do you think about this? I'm like, I've got no idea on freaking taxation, leaving the US, coming to Australia. Put it up in the Facebook group. There'll be some guru in there who'll be able to point you in the right direction.
Yeah, totally.
And so then, I've moved to a facilitator almost.
And that's one of the things we talk about in the book. And I know we'll get to the seven steps in a bit. But one of them is this concept of leading from the middle.
Yeah.
So the idea of you're not at the front saying, I'm the leader, I know what's going on. You're saying to people, this is the direction we're going to head in. But everyone else, start walking. And let's kind of go there together because there are people in your community that are better than you. Sorry, Glenn.
I know.
And well, in every community.
Like the other day, I put a podcast up and it was my own bloody fault because I said to Nate, I'm like, quick, turn the camera on. I need to do an M3X episode, like an express one. I did it. I probably prepped 5 minutes, got some basic tax crap wrong and got called out for it. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I rushed that. I'm a joke. So we deleted the episode.
Yeah,
so,
wow. So, but isn't that good? You've built a community totally. That can call you out on it and doesn't feel bad about it. And then you, as a leader of the community, yeah. you're like, awesome, great. If I was wrong, I was wrong.
Absolutely. And I think the thing with community, you know, yes, in the Facebook group, I will delete stuff if it's discrimination and any of that stuff. But the minute you start silencing things where they're calling out the dictator, that's an issue.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like there's something exciting and scary about building a community around you or your business. The exciting part is that it can be bigger than you.
And it is, yeah.
And the scary part is that you no longer have full control.
No, and they'll turn on you. So, and the weird thing is like, sometimes when we first started, every week I used to do a post, like when we were really small, like, welcome to the Facebook group, these new members. And it was like a post.
And you tag them in?
Yeah, yeah. It was like 60 people and it just got too much. But I used to say, welcome to the cult. Like grab a seat, strap in.
There you go.
Drinks to the left. So I'm going to read these 7 steps and I might just get a brief overview comment from you on each one. So number one, think impact first. Define a clear, honest purpose before you start. So just talk to us about
So this one was really interesting. So for the book, I've went and spoke to dozens of people all around the world. I went to Silicon Valley. I went to phone calls to London and Pakistan and down to Melbourne and all over the place.
I would live in Palo Alto any day of the week.
It's a pretty amazing place, the energy over there.
The excitement in the air.
Yeah, there's a lot of bullshit as well.
Oh, love it.
So I spoke to all these different entrepreneurs and looking at my journey as well of kind of starting Junkie and building up into a business where we've got 70-ish full-time staff now. And the most interesting thing is that almost all the people I spoke to, the way they thought about business was instead of thinking, I want to start $1 million business. I want to earn X $100,000. I want to kind of do anything kind of at this high lofty thing. Instead, the very first thing they did was said, this is the impact that I want the business to have. So it's about how you can think about, do you want to help people in some way? Do you want to change some industry? Do you want to just do something a little bit different? And so thinking what that impact is first before you think of anything else.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note. It's like a lot of people, I'm in, and it's cute and also sometimes embarrassing, and it shouldn't be embarrassing because it is more cute and innocent. I'm in a big podcast group in the States, and a lot of people will write, and you see it every couple of months, and people write, hey guys, I want to start a podcast. Like, what topic should I choose?
Totally.
And it's like, I love that they are keen, but it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you passionate about?
Yeah.
What do you want to change?
Yeah, totally. Like, and so kind of think of what is an area where you can have an impact as opposed to thinking of that end goal of, I'm sure the next question would be, I want a podcast. What topic should I choose? Because I've heard the podcast can make lots of money.
Yes. And if you're wanting to do it for the money, anything, there's no longevity in it and you won't get any money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also a realist that money is really important. And
totally. I always tell my community, it's like, we will have advertisers and show partners from time to time, because we've got to pay bills and I also don't work for free and I don't expect anyone else to.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's that dance.
Yeah. And it's a dance between a lot of the people that I spoke to for this book, the dance between profit and purpose. Mm. And that is kind of balancing the two of them. There's times when profit is really important. There's times when knowing what your purpose as a business and a person is, and you need to kind of dance between the two of those.
Yeah. And I think for, I guess, the M3 community listening now, this all started because when I was a financial advisor, I'm no longer a financial advisor, people would be coming in for financial advice. And it started with, well, you actually don't need formal financial advice. You need to learn how to just control your spending and have some structures in place.
Mm.
So then I developed a spreadsheet that I'd work clients through. And then my friends and family and, you know, everyone would say, oh, Glenn, we need help with our money. And then I would basically sit down with them and do the budget spreadsheet, and I'll do seminars in the community. And it was the same thing every time.
Mm.
And then it turned into an online course. And then I'm like, this just needs to be said. Like, I need to scale this up, because whether you're a best friend of mine, just watch my online course because I don't want to repeat myself because I'm lazy.
Totally.
And it will benefit you.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is the M3 community, it started out of a natural progression. It wasn't like, I'm going to start a podcast. I'm going to start this.
Yeah.
And I'll manufacture something, because when the going gets tough, you'll stop because there's no underlying passion.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's where the most interesting communities and businesses are built. They build slowly over time, and where you might end up a few years later is quite different from where you probably couldn't have predicted where you were from a few years before that.
Totally. You said point two, question everything. This is an interesting one, and I'm questioning this.
So the second step on building a business with cult status is question all the small things. And what this is about is when you think you've got a new project or a new idea or something that you're excited about, sometimes can be overwhelming because there's all these like big things that you're trying to think about. But one of the easiest ways of actually approaching something like that is to break it down into, there's just a series of maybe 100 small decisions you need to make. And there's a new generation of businesses coming through now who are asking the questions because they're curious about why things have always been done that way. So there's lots of different businesses I speak about in the book. One of those is Allbirds Shoes. Do you know Allbirds?
No, I was thinking Birds of Prey, but they went under.
They did go under. They're in the book as well. Yeah.
I was going to say, that'd be a very good case study.
Yeah, that they are because we need to talk about failures as much as to talk about successes. Yeah. So Allbirds is this amazing company started by a New Zealand guy called Tim Brown, who was the vice captain of the New Zealand soccer team. And he moved to Silicon Valley and met a guy over there called Joey Zwillinger. And the two of them started this shoe company, and they questioned everything with the company. So they decided, why are the soles of shoes normally made from a petroleum-based product called, these are not Allbirds, just normal shoes, but why are the soles of shoes made from a petroleum-based product that's pretty shit for the environment?
Yeah.
Why can't it be made from something else? So they developed a new type of technology made from sugarcane. They then said, okay, the top of the shoe, why don't we use New Zealand merino wool to create shoes? So, and then they started looking through the whole supply chain and just questioning everything. Why is so much water used here? And it was big questions like that, as in, you know, that you need technology to do, and small questions like when they built their very first store in San Francisco, they were like, well, when you try on your shoes, why shouldn't the chair slightly lean forward, allowing you to try the shoes on it easier? Or when you ask for a pair of shoes in a shoe shop, someone normally goes out the back into the stock room. Why is the design of the wall not beautiful boxes? And when you say, I want a size 7, yeah, they say, oh, here, it's just here.
Yeah.
So just all of these things they questioned along the way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I know the whole thing with the M3 community in terms of, you know, the paid staff is everyone's got latitude, which is, you know, no, this is like you said at the start, it's like we're going in this direction. Let's all head there.
Mm.
Like when they started editing, I'm sure there was crap that I would do in terms of workflow. He's like, what the hell are you doing? And yeah, sure. I'm probably like, oh, just because that's the, you know, you can't lead by example because you cap out at what you know. But like, it was just like, no, he found a more efficient way to do it.
Yeah.
So whether it's customer facing crap or back end processes, always question.
Totally. Mm. And just comes from a curiosity.
Yes.
So why do we do it like that?
Yes.
Just because everyone else is doing it like that, why can't we think of a different way of doing it? And that's one of the steps that I think is relevant to someone who works in a company as well as someone who wants to start a business.
I'm about to butcher this analogy, but there was a book that I've read. And before we started this podcast, I was trying to tell Tim something because, you know, you read stuff and you just remember this principle and you know it, but you can't repeat it.
You turn it into your own analogy by the time you remember it.
There was this analogy where it's like in the US Army or something like that, when before they shoot the cannon or bazooka, you got to wait 5 seconds, guys. And everyone's like, why are we waiting 5 seconds? And it's like, oh, no, because back in 1992, we had to move the horses away so they didn't get scared. So it's like, why? You've just got to be like, are we doing this because that's the way it's always been done?
Yeah.
And things change. So. Yeah.
And we're living in a world now where traditional barriers to starting things are falling down.
So good.
Entire industries are changing. So it's the people that are asking those questions are the ones that are finding some success.
Love that. Number three, refine your superpower.
Yeah. So this one is relevant to anyone, whether you want to start a business or you are just a human. So a superpower is something that you are slightly better than other people at.
Yes.
It might be something that you have refined over years. It might be something that your friends tell you you're good at and you haven't quite realized.
I saw it and it was, I think, about middle of the book. Yep, there it was. There was a quote that you put in there by Greta Thunberg.
It's at the very start.
At the very start, is it?
Section. Got it here.
Oh, do you want to read it?
Yeah, page 100.
And this is, everyone listening, this is an example of the audiobook that's also coming out.
It is, yes, available on Audible and wherever you get audiobooks from today. So this is Greta Thunberg, I think, is
Thunberg.
Greta Thunberg, the climate activist who started all the school strikes for climate. And she said, "I have Asperger's, and that means I'm sometimes a bit different from the norm. And given the right circumstances, being different is a superpower."
Yeah, and I like that. And I immediately thought, I personally could not get on stage to the UN and tell all these world leaders they're dickheads. Loosely paraphrasing Greta. But her, I guess, superpower was the fact that she has Asperger's. And she's doubling down on that.
Yeah. She's not shying away from it.
Yeah, she's not trying to go, "Oh, I'll only do this." But she's like, "Oh, it's who I am."
Yeah, it's part of who she is.
Yes.
She can't change it. And she's kind of leaning into what that superpower is.
Yeah.
So it might be something that you're born with.
Yes.
It might be something that you develop over time. It might be something that's happened to you, you know, an experience.
Mm.
For me, my superpower, actually in the book, I kind of talk a bit around how I kind of figured it out.
Mm.
So it's easy to say in retrospect. It's not one of those things you wake up and go, "Oh, that's my superpower." It's one of those things. And there's some exercises in the book of trying to help people figure out what their superpower is. Mm. For me, my whole career has been, once I look back at it now, has been starting communities, whether they be in events or online communities, and then fueling them with stories. So that's kind of my superpower, and it's taken me a long time to figure that out.
I'm actually going to, over the weekend, look at and try and refine my own superpower.
I was thinking about what yours was on the way here.
Yeah, and I don't know if I know I'm a starter. I'll start stuff and I'll go at it. I need to honestly refine it myself.
Yeah.
Just so it's front of mind, and maybe it is, I will double down on something and not play to my weakness, but double down on my strengths, go at it if I've got a gut feeling, and then we'll work it out later.
Yeah.
And I'll bring in a team to help execute that.
If, once you know what it is,
yeah,
it's amazing how powerful
that
can be.
But I think you're right. It's not like, you know, use your superpower. It's like, no, just actually become aware of that.
Yeah. And then refine it. And I think one of your superpowers, and you can have more than one superpower. It's there's not just, you know, like a
dashing looks and an amazing podcast voice.
No, I think one of your superpowers is that you are extremely curious. So when you get someone on, you really care about what they
scratch and
And then you can take something that is complicated and help explain it to people. And that is a real skill. Not everyone can do that.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I wanted to kind of get back into like the almost the CVP of the podcast. You know, what are we about? And I think it's back to when I had my financial planning business. My branding guy, Jason Nye. Hey, Jason, if you still listen.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Haven't met you, but sure you're cool.
He's all right. He's a good guy. Nah, love him. So, Jason, my branding expert, when we did my financial planning business, it was around, we make the complex simple.
There you go.
So it's interesting.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
And that's just something I picked up.
And
from
he extracted that from me with the branding work that we did.
Yeah. But the most interesting thing and part of, I'd really tried to make this book practical. Like there's enough theory out there and what I wanted to do, there's 14 like really practical exercises.
Yes.
And some of those exercises are, ask yourself these questions to figure out what your superpower is.
Yes.
And some of them are, what are things that your friends say about you or someone's told you at a work review that you've done? Because it's sometimes hard to see your superpower yourself.
Yeah.
So the fact that he has said that and I have said that and we have never met each other and it's been however many years ago that you did that,
yeah,
there is definitely something in that.
So for those out there, you know, I want you to just press pause. We're going to not talk for like 30 seconds. Going to look at the clock, and we're just going to, because my kind of thing in the background, and I've told the team, maybe not so much Nathan, but I will, but the, you know, the Jess producer and the designer, all the front end staff, and that's not a power of mine, you know, running an internal team. I suck at that. So Nathan, you're hearing this first. We always have to do things through the three lenses.
Mm-hmm.
One, are you adding value? Two, is it helpful? And three, is it practical?
Mm.
So that's kind of the lens that, because I want to give people practical takeaways, because that's what actually matters.
Totally.
So we're going to just stop for 30 seconds. We'll leave the mics open. And I just want everyone to think what their superpower could be, or what they think their friends would say about them. So we'll go now. And back into your body.
I was half expecting, you know, on radio when they have dead air, there is a song that comes on, like an automatic song that comes on. I was half waiting for the song to come on.
Yeah, and I was just thinking we could have done that in post, but wouldn't been the same.
No, I had something quite nice about doing it in person.
And it wasn't exactly 30 seconds, but who cares?
Probably felt like 30 seconds to someone listening.
Felt like an eternity, dead air. So there you go, everyone. Refine your superpower. The next one, which I love this because it's just so curious.
Mm.
Defining your altar.
Mm.
So are you about to wheel in a lamb and slaughter it on my nice rug here? Like what?
Yeah, this is probably one of the only actual cult references the entire book.
Oh, he's going there.
Yeah, and I actually had a lot of fun thinking around the kind of cult businesses. And this was the chapter where I was able to use all those cult references. But the more I looked and thought and discussed and researched and interviewed these businesses that have cult status, the more I realized that almost all of them, without exception, had an altar. Mm. And so what I mean by an altar is they had somewhere either physical or digital or online where all of their community could come together. And without getting too spiritual about it, it was somewhere where energy could be focused.
Mm.
So if you were someone who came into that community, you might meet other people through that. You might discover that you feel like you belong through that. And that had this ability to really make those businesses become sticky. So people just kept on coming back to them over and over again.
Mm. I know I did give you a brief overview of what we're going to talk about now, but just to respect everyone's time, so we're not here for an hour and a half, if we can just pivot live and probably, can you give us two examples of maybe brands in the book that you've talked about where what they've used as their altar, and I want everyone to think about. And it's really weird that I've just turned this into a bit of a, I wanted to throw this back on everyone to give them the chance to actually think about their workplace or their vision for their business or their current business. You know, what's a couple of examples in the book? Because I also want to leave people hungry.
Yeah. Oh, there's dozens of examples in the book. So I would take 2 hours, I think, to run through some of those examples.
Yeah.
I'm going to use one really close to home, which is you and the M3 community, because that's something that everyone who's listening to this will really understand.
Right.
And so go back.
Am I in the revised version?
If we sell enough copies, I'll do a second edition.
Yeah, that's right.
And Glenn, you will be in there. Uh-huh. But if you go back 10, 15 years ago, if you had a business like you do now, if you kind of had a podcast, or it probably would have been a radio show back then, that would have been the end of it. So people, you would have come on and people would have listened at every week and they would have got this information and then they would have gone back to their daily lives. What technology has allowed now is that community has a place to go to. So in the M3 community, I think it's the Facebook group is the altar, which is where new members come in. It's where people feel supported. They can ask a question. It's where you don't have to do all the work because, as you said, the audience is super smart and connected, and they kind of ask their own questions and answer them. And an altar is somewhere where there should be your own language and rituals that are unique to that community. Mm. And we were having a quick chat before this around if there's anything in the M3 community that is unique to it. And the idea of if you want to create more of a cult status with your company, leaning into that and really dialing up some of those rituals and some of that language.
Yeah. There was one ritual that I've stopped doing because it could have been seen, and again, like with optics is everything, okay? And this could have been seen as a bad thing. I can guarantee 90% of people loved it, but I just had to be careful. We actually, our Facebook group used to have an altar, and that was if people got in there, because I can't and the team can't govern a group that's that big and it's growing and it's not the biggest one out there. It's not the smallest. So we have to kind of self-regulate and self-moderate. And then basically what I used to say, and I still do if I talk about it, is like, we don't put up with anyone coming in here selling snake oil or Bitcoin scams or anything like that. And people that used to slip in, and I think some of them were fake profiles anyway, and that's kind of why I half did it, because I knew it was, the whole intent was to just suck people in. I used to name and shame or take a screenshot. It's like, or I used to tag them actually. It's like, hey, at whatever, just giving you the chance now to leave the group before you're booted. I want everyone to see that you were, you know, sliding to people's DMs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the altar as this sacrificial lamb. It's like, you've come in here, you've got through the gate, you know, because can't vet everyone. You've DM'd people, you've put links on posts. Everyone in the community needs to see that if you are like that, piss off now.
Yeah.
Because you will get the bad attention.
Yeah, totally. By defining what you're not,
yes,
you are defining what you are.
And it was kind of, it was half, I found it comical. That was half of it. And the other half was almost like, let everyone know, we're not about this here. So if you see stuff like this, you need to report it so we can get rid of them.
Totally. And then that sets a trend.
And it's a culture. So
yeah.
I kind of like the analogy of culture. Like, you know, this top of the bench here, hello, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see our delicious IKEA bench here, which I need to upgrade because it's so token, but whatever. if that was full of crap, right, and then someone put, I don't know, a bit of rat sack or something poisonous there, it'd kind of blend in. But the culture I want to set in the group, that this whole bench was clear. So then if there was the snake oil or the rat sack, everyone can see what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think even just by you doing that every time someone does that, that's a ritual. By you using language like snake oil, that's a language.
Yeah.
And that then becomes self-fulfilling, because if you do it a couple of times and you're not there and someone sees someone else doing that, either they'll tell you or they'll do it themselves. Yeah.
And somebody messaged me the other day and said, oh, this person's messaging me. Because that, I think people get in, it's their target market, and they want to just peel off. It's like peeling off the sheep from the pack.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll send them a message, hey, have you thought about investing? Oh, yeah, I have. So, but then I'll just go in and just remove the person. I don't make a song and dance of it anymore, because a few people said, oh, don't worry about this. But yeah, again, my heart was half of it. I think it's just hilarious to name and shame because it's comical and everyone, most people liked it. And the other half was like, just a warning, everyone, we're not about this.
Yeah.
It's just...
yeah, setting the tone.
So what is your altar, like the business that you currently work at? And there might not be an altar. It could, because there might not be a clear culture from the top. Mm. It might be just shambles.
Yeah. And I think it's important for... And I really think every business can find one. So if you're a store... selling candles. When someone comes into your store, or they're coming into your altar, so how are you welcoming them? What's the language that you use? Is there a ritual that you do?
And in the book, and this is why I love this book, and it's, take this as an absolute compliment, it's not, I'm not selling another book. There was a book called Tribes by Seth Godin. Okay. And I've got books that I've got that I give away to people, right? And I used to, when I talk to people about building a business, I used to give them a copy of that book. And in the front, I used to write, hey, whatever, don't build a business, build a tribe.
Mm.
Now, the compliment is I'm now going to buy this book and have copies here in the studio. So whenever I'm interviewing young people and people of all walks of life, whatever, it's this is the book and the gift that I'm going to give them.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because it's fresher. I think it's more practical than tribes, just from my point of view. And all that to say, there's a section in this book where you, again, that practicals, you give the example, even if you own a cafe and you go through all the touch points of like, so a person walks in, then they look at the menu, then they this. So how can you refine the altar along the way?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
So again, we're not trying to sell other books, whatever, but I just wanted to use that as an example that I am currently going to use this book for my gift to people.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And that's you've understood exactly why I've written this book.
Yes.
And it's for anyone, as I said, anyone who's just thinking about an idea, got something in the back of their head, one day might want to, or just wants to make their workplace or culture a little bit better.
Yeah. So, like, I've got a half-written book. And, again, writing is not my strength. I hate it. I've had a half-written book for over a year.
Mm.
I met someone at the start of the year to help me refine the structure, and COVID happened and I got lazy and all that. So, but I use the example with your business. If you could be the best baker in the world working, but then if you want to go and start a bakery, you could be crap at running a business.
Mm.
So as soon as you're self-employed, as soon as you're running a business, you're a business owner, you're not a baker. So first and foremost, you're a business owner. Oh, by the way, you bake. So I guess all that to say, the reason I like this book, and again, I'll show you a book after you leave that, because a lot of people reach out to me that want to come on and talk about their book.
Mm.
Maybe 10% get on because, you know, it's got to match my vibe and the community.
Mm.
I'll show you a book before you leave and I'll tell you why they're not seeing light of day on this podcast. But in this book, the reason why I think it's important is it will give you the tools to help you on that other stuff, because when you do start your thing, trust me, the baking has to take care of itself. You're not going, all right, so how am I going to bake today? Am I adding 2 cups of flour, 1 cup of sugar if you're making white bread?
Totally.
Lol, jokes. So the craft and the trade has to take care of itself. You can't focus on that anymore.
Mm.
You've got to focus on the business, and this book will be the practical tips to actually give you the framework to kill it.
Yeah. That's the whole point of the book.
Mm, I'm getting worked up here.
I like it.
Number 5, drop the BS.
Yeah. There is so much noise, so much bullshit, especially with social media, with influencers where everyone's trying to sell you something.
Mm.
The people that are connecting are the people that are dropping the bullshit.
Yeah.
People that are telling it like it is. And social media, the way of thinking about social media is that everyone really is their own media channel. Mm. And I come from a media background where I've built lots of different media businesses.
Mm.
And everyone, no matter if you have 10 followers on Instagram or 10,000 followers, you are a media channel.
Yeah.
And you need to think like that if you want to use it for your business.
Yeah.
And so part of that is how are you going to kind of cut through all the noise, cut through all the bullshit, and deliver content or kind of talk to people as though you're on the same level as them.
Mm. Yeah, that's cool. Number 6, lead from the middle. And again, in light of me flipping the structure of this interview on the fly, I want to talk about Zoe Foster Blake because you've interviewed her for the book and she can't do anything wrong. So talk to us about how you're seeing her kind of leading from the middle in her community.
Yeah. So I'll quickly give an overview of what the chapter's about and then I'll talk about Zoe.
Perfect.
So lead from the middle, the concept behind that is that when you start a business, you kind of become a leader without you even wanting to be. If you sell something or if you start a bakery, you're leading then your staff, you're leading the little community around you, and you've got a choice. And the choice is that you can lead from the front, which is almost like a militaristic, antiquated way of thinking about it. Some people say you can lead from behind. I think Nelson Mandela used to give an analogy about been like a flock of sheep and like the shepherd behind. But the most interesting way that I'm seeing these businesses with cult status leading is leading from the middle. And so what that means is that you set the direction where you want to go and you build a community around you, and then the community starts telling you what it wants and you have to listen to it. And one of the people who I think is doing that in a really fascinating way is Zoe Foster Blake. Most people might know Zoe Foster Blake. She's an author. She's written a gazillion books. She was a former beauty director at women's magazines. She's married to Hamish Blake, the comedian. And she started a business 5 years ago called GoTo. And GoTo was a skincare business. And it kind of comes from the idea of people used to often ask her, like, what's your go-to lipstick? What's your go-to moisturizer? So she started GoTo, and she has built this. She's been able to take her own personality, which is no bullshit, which is very fun and friendly, and put that into this brand. She's now got 40-something staff. She's stocked at Sephora all throughout the US. During COVID, sales went up because people were kind of wanting to pamper themselves. Mm. And she's just this amazing example of someone who has been able to build. I think Zoe would have done it without thinking. And so that's why when I look at her, I've tried to like analyze, how did you do that? Where she's just naturally no bullshit. She naturally leads from the middle. She naturally is kind of questioned, why should makeup be super expensive, or why should it use products that, you know, tested on animals? So she's just been this kind of cult hero who's built now this cult status brand.
Yeah, and I think there's so many of our listeners who, you know, love what she's about, and I've got her management's details from Tim, everyone, and I'm going to ask if we can interview her.
You should, if you can get her on the pod.
Yeah.
She's just very down-to-earth, inspirational, amazing Australian success story that we should be celebrating.
Totally. And that's the problem. Like, I personally, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the States going to conferences over there, and I've spent time in the Valley like you have, just to get inspired and encouraged, because I find sometimes you have to get off the island because we don't champion success as much here as, say, the American culture.
We don't. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why not?
I think also that it gets to a certain level and tall poppy syndrome kicks in Australia, which is, you're successful, you've made money, now I need to tear you down. Because I'm got insecurities myself.
And like, because I just figure there's enough kind of quote unquote work for everyone. Like when I had my business, I didn't, it was like, oh, do a SWOT analysis. Like, who you got? I don't have a competition. I'm doing my thing. You know, if you vibe it, you vibe it. If you don't, whatever, it's all good. Like, I was friends with all the local financial advisors. I'd send clients to them. I'm like, yeah, it's all good. We're doing our thing.
But that pays off in the long term.
Yeah, and even like with the podcast, like there's other money podcasts. There's no competition. I don't think there is. We're just all doing our thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people listen to all of them anyway.
Yeah.
Let's just all get on the same page and help within our own flavor.
It's really interesting. In the book, one of the things I talk about is knowing who your enemy is.
Mm.
And that's not... It could be competition.
Yes.
But the enemy could be a concept. It could be like the antiquated way that things have been done. Or it could be the way that...
Or easy credit. Hello, everyone at Afterpay.
There's your enemy. You know who they are. And you can define yourself off them.
I actually reached out to Nick Moller to come on the podcast. Because as much as I disagree with easy credit like that, I think I'm more interested in his vision of money for the future because it's a disruptor.
So, it is. And they've built something amazing, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And what they have done is kind of no different to what banks and credit cards have done over the years. They're just repackaging it in a different way.
Yeah. So I'm anti, the enemy is consumer debt in my world.
Mm.
And my view and passion and purpose for this podcast is to get people into their early 30s when their habits are formed and all that stuff without consumer debt.
Mm.
So the enemy isn't, oh, Victoria and she's on the money, or Equity Mates.
Yeah.
Like they've all, like I've got the guys coming on the podcast soon.
Yeah.
And everyone's welcome. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, I'm also a firm believer in the rising tide raises all boats.
Yeah.
You want competition. You want people that are doing stuff better than you, because that inspires you
totally
to do better, and then everyone wins.
Yeah. The seventh point is strap yourself in, baby.
Yes.
And you got some cool diagrams.
There's quite a few interesting diagrams in the book. Very interesting.
And I want to hear you read these in your audiobook. So just imagine this like squiggle and it's like...
That's what I had to do when I narrated the audiobook. I turned to the audio producer. I'm like, what happens with diagrams? He said, well, you need to describe it. And some of these are quite complicated. So I was saying, there's a curve that starts and then goes down and then goes up and then falls again. And then imagine another line that does this. The real test is going to be when... people listen to the audiobook. I might try and get people to draw it for me without looking at what it's meant to be.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a test.
Totally. So strap yourself in. So you basically just talk about the ups and downs of life when you go down this road.
Yeah. And like, I didn't want to just sugarcoat it and say, isn't this amazing? Everyone just start your own business and just, you know, everything's rosy because it's really freaking hard. And I wanted to put stories in there of businesses that had failed and of the mental health toll that it takes on people and the stress. And I've got some of my story in there of one of the most stressful times in my business, ironically, was just before we sold my company to another company, and how stressed I was because I felt like it was all the years of like pent up emotion and everything all just kind of hitting me all at once. So strap yourself in is not to deter people, but it's just for you to be aware. If you do go down this path, you want to start a business, freaking amazing, but just be aware it's going to take over your life.
Yeah. And I've even shared on numerous occasions, like starting my business in my 20s, I had undiagnosed mental health and I just thought it was extra tough.
Yeah.
I'm like, I actually jokingly think, far out, if I was medicated, imagine all the money I could have actually made because I wasn't working at capacity.
Yeah. There's something in the book also that talks about, you know, the serious mental health correlation between people who start a business and have bad mental health.
Mm.
And experts don't know whether the business causes it or whether people who have those that type of mental health are attracted to that type of business.
Interesting.
Mm. But the facts are, and I kind of lay it out in a little kind of somber words in the book, just on the higher levels of everything that entrepreneurs have.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this episode isn't about mental health, but we'll spend 2 minutes talking about it as a public health announcement. The way I kind of, someone explained to me once, whether it was a doctor or whatever, usually zeros, rock bottom, tens, euphoria, most people just go about a 6 or 7. So if they have a hard day, you'll drop them down to 4 or 5.
Mm.
Some, or if you know you have a few freaking lines of coke, you might be at 11 for it. You know what I mean? Like there's this. But for me personally, my normal vibe with lacking serotonin in my brain was probably at a 3, and then the extra pressure from starting the business, it took me down through the floor.
Mm.
Where if I was sitting at a 7 normally, it wouldn't have impacted me as much. So that's why I think it's so important to, I think like an SSRI or SSNI might just be a bit of a life vest.
Yeah.
It helps you keep above the water.
Yeah. One of the guys I spoke to for the book was called Michael Fox, who started Shoes of Prey, which is an Australian women's shoe company that ended up borrowing about $35 or $40 million. Not borrowing. They had investors. And he said that running a business, the highs were higher because he came from Google before that.
Yeah.
The highs were higher than he'd ever experienced and the lows were lower.
Yeah.
So I think using your wave analogy,
it
just, you need to be prepared. That's why I say strap yourself in because you might go up to an 11 and you might go down to a -1.
Yeah.
And you need to figure out what your mechanisms are to help you through that.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I did want to actually talk about, there's a thing in there that you, and we'll finish up now to respect everyone's time and your time. You talked about, I'm at my best when.
Mm.
So talk to us about this part in the book.
Yeah. So this is one of the 14 practical exercises in there because I talk a lot around, as I said, the mental health toll and how to deal with it. And there's a lot of kind of self-care strategies and kind of things you can do. And I just wanted to really simplify it down into kind of 4 areas. And it's just a little exercise you can do to figure out you're at your best when you are. Let me just pull up which 4 categories is in the book.
Physical, mental, emotional, creative.
That's it. Yeah. So physically, mentally, emotionally, and creative.
Mm.
It was to think about those four areas of your life and try to think about a time when you were at your best in them. So the idea is not to come up with an idealized version and be like, I want to meditate at 3 a.m. in the morning and then go for a run on the beach and
swim with dolphins,
because that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So the idea is to think back in your life and think of, okay, when did you feel at your best in those four different areas? Write that down. So think of, okay, for me, mentally and creatively and emotionally, I've got a series of things in there of kind of when I feel at my best, and knowing what they are, because there's also times when you do them, like you might know that I feel really good if I go to the gym in the morning. You know what it is, that what that trigger is, and you need to know what it is. And then as you come into a time when you know that might be a bit more turbulent, or you've kind of got something coming up that's going to be really stressful, figuring out what those triggers are and then using them and doing them before it hits rather than after it hits. Because if you're thinking about that wave, you don't want to wait till you get to a minus one before going, I should meditate.
Yeah,
you want to go from when you're at a three and go, I should meditate. I should go spend time with my family. I should go to the park with my dog to try and get you to a four so that you know if you're going to go down, you hopefully only go to a one instead of a minus one.
Yeah, so good. Now, I've got a bit of a, well, Tim's got a treat. He brought two books that we're going to give away. Now, what I like to do, Tim, when I pick up this microphone, I always like to have in my mind that I'm talking to the one. So that one person. So if you're listening to this now, there's going to be two people out there. I want you to think of somebody. I'm going to use the first one as an example. You are listening to this podcast. You live in Melbourne and you're commuting or you're on a tram right now. If that's you, I want you to send me an Instagram photo or whatever in the message. When I try and like elaborate more, you sound like a million years old. Instagram photos. So if you're in Melbourne on a tram commuting and you want a copy, let me know and I'll send you one of these copies.
Yeah, nice.
Tim,
yeah.
What's your magical person?
The vibe that I'm feeling is someone in New South Wales.
Yep.
So I'm going to keep it broad.
Yep.
And they are doing household chores right now.
Wow.
So they might be cleaning. They might be doing something where they just need a bit of a distraction and they're listening to the podcast.
So good. So if you are one of those two people, send your photo in or message. Go, hey, that's me. It's a bit of an honesty system. You could be, you know, at a coal mine in Perth right now.
if you're doing cleaning, we want a photo of the broom or something, implement that you are holding.
Absolutely. Now, and I just want to add, it's available on Booktopia.
It is available everywhere you get books.
Yep.
So Amazon, Booktopia, Dimmix, Audible, any of the audiobooks, Kindle, however you'd like to consume your
and
books.
And I'll put a link in the show notes to buy this as well.
Yeah, awesome.
Through Booktopia.
Booktopia. Yeah, Booktopia. It's currently sitting at number one in the business and finance books.
Wow.
It's pretty damn exciting.
Full disclosure, it's an affiliate link in Booktopia.
There you go.
There you go, everyone. So, yeah. And then also, it's really important to note that Tim, this book was printed and bound in Australia.
It was.
So, that's...
It was.
I was actually looking at that before when you were talking because that's important.
Yeah, my publisher called Pantera Press are essentially a social good publisher. And so everything they do, it's printed on recycled paper. It's printed at a great place in Melbourne.
And Pantera, if you're interested in helping me finish my book, give me a shout out, please.
they'll be listening to this and watching.
Oh, will they?
Yeah.
I'll give you a copy of the video as well.
Yeah, awesome.
Sweet. Tim Duggan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Glenn.
And
I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome here anytime. You've got my email.
Awesome.
If you're after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. But if you do want a financial advisor or mortgage broker to talk with about your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'll put you in touch with one of our trusted professionals.
This podcast supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you want some other giving options, or if you are unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
Thanks to Jess Knaus, producer, Nathan Robertson, editor, and me, Asher. Anyway, make sure you're connected via Instagram and our free Facebook group. We also film most of our content now, so check out My Millennial Money on YouTube.